show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, we're getting closer and closer to the season, and things are continuing to happen, and we will continue to talk about them as we always do. And the man who is always worth talking about, Michael Engel. Mike, he is with me today. Mike, how are you doing on this? It's dipped back into the colder weather, unfortunately. It's getting into that part of the season where it's you know, you need to poop or get off the pot, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But they keeps just cold, and then it's 65 one day, and then it's 35 the next, and it's just annoying.
Yeah, do you want to be spring or not? Like, make up your mind.
Yeah, just
like,
make a decision here.
Let's go. I'm ready for whichever. Just, you know, commit. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you know,
and it's
still have my sweaters and my hoodies and all that. It's still out. It's all good. You know, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm ready.
And it's almost apropos that the weather itself can't commit, because it seems like the Royals can't commit either to what they want to do. They're in terms of how they're the direction of the franchise. They want to bring up all these young kids and start playing, or do they want to try and sign some veteran guys and patch together a team and win some games? You know, who it's hard to tell these days. And how about that for a segue, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
The reason I bring that up, of course, is biggest news this week that we'll just jump right into here. Royals make another veteran signing. That veteran signing is John Jay to a one-year, $3 million deal. Another very team-friendly, very cheap, kind of weirdly so off-season, or weirdly so as part of this weird offseason type deal. But you've got a guy here in John Jay who's a career 288 hitter with a career 355 on base percentage. He doesn't bring much power to the table, but as a typical, you know, leadoff kind of on base slap hitter type guy, you know, he's your man. And he fills a hole in center field that we've been questioning about, you know, wondering what that was going to be, and some interesting kind of tidbits of the Lorenzo Cain situation came out. We can kind of talk about here in a little bit, but, you know, focusing on Jay for the moment, he'll be your opening day center fielder, but, you know, the implications for that being people who were hoping maybe Bubba Starling would grab that role, that's not happening. Compounding that issue, of course, not only is just that Jay is here, but Bubba Starling himself has come down with a bit of an oblique injury. So who knows what his situation is going to be moving forward. And the Royals probably weren't too enticed, as they shouldn't have been, by the prospect of having, you know, Paolo Orlando starting the season as an everyday center fielder. Again, Paolo Orlando, I think, is a good fourth outfielder, but you don't want him to be your guy every day, and Alex Gordon moving to center field, that didn't seem like the greatest idea in the world. So Royals just went out, and John Jay was available, and he was cheap, and they decided, why the hell not? So they brought him in. And, you know, combined with the Lucas Duda signing from last week that we talked about, you know, they're starting, you know, this team that we thought would be filled with a lot of fresh young faces is now going to be more fresh veteran faces, it seems. With Duda at first, they brought Esky back. They got John Jay out there. You know, Alex Gordon's still here. Ian Kennedy's here. And there's, you know, possibly talk of a Mike Moustakas reunion. We'll get to that in a little bit later in the show. So my thoughts on the John Jay signing, I like it. You know, nothing, again, when I say I like it, I'm not over the moon about it. But, you know, I was like, oh, okay. I like, you know. That's not bad. We kind of thought John Jay would be a good target for the Royals anyway. If they're wanting, you know, he's starting to get a little bit over on that aging curve. He'll be 33 by the start of the season here. So, you know, he's up there in baseball age, but he's been productive. You know, last year he had a 750 OPS. You know, he doesn't hit a ton of home runs or anything, but, you know, really good on base guy. Strong, they plays good defense, played a lot of years for St. Louis. Last year he was with the Cubs. So, you know, he's a guy that he's going to provide some stability in a position that was maybe the most unstable going into the offseason for the Royals, because, you know, they at least had options at right field with Soler and Bonifacio and the second base shortstop. You know, what was going to happen? Who was, they at least had some options between Merrifield and Mondesi, and, you know, and especially once they brought Esky back. So it really feels like, you know, center field was the biggest one where it was really like, we don't have any clue what's going to happen. So, the Royals made that easy for us. We got that figured out. So, you know, I liked it. Again, wasn't, you know, over the moon about it, but it was a solid signing, I think. Nothing bad about a one-year deal. It's perplexing in the sense that I don't know what this means about what the Royals think is going to happen this year and what their plans are and how they want to go about it. But, you know, either way, it's, you know, I don't think it's too bad of a deal. I mean, did you have similar thoughts, or were you – a little bit different there?
It's a pretty inert type of signing, and that, like, you know, it doesn't even like raise the temperature that much. Like John Jay, you know, can fill the role. You know, the Royals definitely had questions there. I don't know that they trust Paulo Orlando. I think, like you said, he's much better fit as a fourth outfielder. Kind of, you know, he's not great defensively, Orlando. He can kind of be a defensive replacement, kind of be a pinch run option, and can platoon and face lefties, and that's kind of fine for him. So this kind of allows Orlando to be in more of a, you know, that kind of position. It allows Gordon to play his more natural position. You know, same with Bonifacio. You don't have to try that. I think his major league debut, he did play center field, though. But you don't want him playing center field more than once.
No.
You know, and Bubba Starling, the timing of Bubba having it reported that he's got another little oblique issue and John Jay signing, I don't think it's connected, but I don't think it's really a coincidence either. And I'm sure we'll see Bubba as long as he's healthy at some point this year. But, you know, the Royals kind of did want to make sure they had an option, it seems like. And they got a pretty cheap option. Jay is fine. He's whatever. The money's okay. It's nothing that if you have to cut ties, you're stuck with or feel bad about. If you get the opportunity to trade him for anything of value, then, you know, you save a little bit. But, you know, it's not much of an investment. If he completely tanks, you're not really stuck with anything either. So it's just kind of a whatever deal that kind of works out for everybody. I asked a friend of mine who is a Cubs fan what he thought about John Jay, and he said he is aggressively average.
That is fantastic.
Sounds about right.
That's perfect.
He also added, I'll say this, Jay has zero power and doesn't really steal bases. So there you go.
Well,
but
something.
Yeah, but I was just kind of looking at his numbers, and you know, the interesting kind of thing with John Jay is you look at what his profile is. He walks a decent amount of time. He makes a good amount of contact. He's mostly singles hitter with the occasional double. Not a lot of home runs. Can play center field. Maybe it's not his best position. He's got decent enough speed. Sounded familiar to me. So I went and looked at another old friend of ours. And let's say John Jay for his career is a 288 hitter, 288 batting average, mm-hmm. on base of 355 and a slugging of 383.
Okay.
This other player, career batting average of 285, on base of 350, mm-hmm. slug of 387.
Hmm.
That other player is Nori Aoki.
Weird.
So they more or less signed Nori Aoki with an even shorter
right.
name.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with it. I mean, John Jay's not going to be blocking anybody. Maybe he can hit leadoff or second or something. And, I think he'll produce.
Because we all know Esty's going to be leading off, so he'll hit second.
Oh, God help us. I think it's Ned Yost. So
you never know.
We'll see. So I found that interesting. They're both kind of the same type of player. John Jay is a little bit more of an opposite field hitter than Aoki was. But that's kind of the main difference between them is – they're just, they're very similar in profiles. So I wouldn't expect John Jay to, like, ignite the team and lead them as an MVP candidate. But he'll probably do a solid job out there. And at the end of the year, move on and see what happens. And if he doesn't, like I said, they can really cut ties with them pretty easily. Bubba Starling, if he emerges, it's not hard to find a way to get him in there, So, I mean, I think it'll end up working out one way or the other. If for some reason somebody does emerge, the Royals, I don't feel like they're going to be tied to John Jay if somebody else jumps up and deserves some more playing time. We'll see. We'll see. I could be wrong on that point because it is still the Royals and they do like to, stick with the veterans,
right.
I think, a little long sometimes. But, it's a fine signing. It's nothing I'm going to go. I'm not going to go buy a jersey.
I'm going to write home about.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's fine. It's, it's another left-handed bat also. When we talked about it a bit with Lucas Duda, mm-hmm. that they were a very right-handed heavy lineup. And, when you consider that most starting pitchers, it's about 3/4 of the starting pitchers that a team will face are right-handed. It's good to get another lefty bat in there. So you've got
right.
Gordon, John Jay, Lucas Duda all available to hit from the left side. So I think that helps kind of balance the lineup a bit too. So another little advantage.
Absolutely. And, I assume this is kind of the Royals' plan, is to grab all these pieces, put them together, see if it makes something. If it does, you ride it as long as you can, just roll with it. But, we saw the Rays do this probably in the kind of late 2000s, I think, where they would – sign a lot of these people to contracts, and then they would look to kind of trade them at the trade deadline. And now, because of the way things have evolved, the trade deadline trades don't seem to be as lucrative as they have been in the past. So I don't necessarily think that's the Royals' plan, is to invest all in that. But the idea being, if Lucas Duda has another 30 home run type season and he starts out really fast hitting a lot of home runs, and John Jay has a typical John Jay season, maybe even a little bit better to start the season, then either, one of two things happen. Either you start winning some games and put yourself in a position to possibly snag maybe a second wild card spot. I mean, that seems like a stretch, even with the addition of Jay to the current roster. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I think if you're the Royals, you're putting on those tinted glasses to where you're saying that could be a possibility. And then the other possibility being, okay, if those two things happen with Duda and Jay, but they still don't win games, well, then you can trade, everyone always needs an outfielder, so John Jay would be in demand at the trade deadline for a cheap price, because the Royals would, you know, the contract is not very lucrative. So, and then same deal with, you know, Lucas Duda. It'd be a little bit harder to find a fit for him because of, you know, first baseman typically, you know, it's a little bit more of a defined need, but, you know, it's still something that they would have that could possibly get some value in return. You know, not a ton of value, but, you know, every little bit helps, I suppose. So I gotta, again, I'm not necessarily saying that this is what I think the Royals are exactly doing or whatever, but I could definitely see that being a mindset that they have, that, hey, you know, this gives us a few options that we can start the season and kind of see how things develop. And then from there, you know, kind of take it as they come, if you will. So I don't know. I, you know, it doesn't move the needle a ton, but it's definitely, you know, it definitely doesn't make the Royals worse. Probably makes them better. How much better? Who knows?
Maybe, minimally, but
you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, maybe they were, 68 to 70 win team. Now with Duda and Jay, maybe they're a 70 to 72 win team, or right, whatever that's worth. You know, I mean, to the Royals, that may be worth a lot. I don't know, but that's just kind of, that's how it feels. Those kind of moves.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And Dayton Moore went out and he was in a story by Rustin Dodd on The Athletic. So the rumor, the thought, the guess from last week turned out to be true. Go figure. He mentioned something kind of like that they wanted to go out and see what they had before they started to commit those long-term free agent dollars. So, like, right now they've got a payroll around $115 million, give or take. But next year the payroll drops right away to $69 million. And I think past 2021 – let me see, 18, 19, 20, 21. Past that, they may not have an actual, like, committed dollar value of payroll at all right now. So,
wow.
You know, everything's either, like, options at the end of, you know, extended contracts and stuff like that, or players who would be eligible for arbitration but haven't reached that point. So, you know, they're getting to that kind of stage where, like, you know, the low payroll we saw in 2011 – you know, after this year, it starts to clear out to that point. These one-year deals really help that, so that they can kind of see, okay, who can overtake some competition, who can earn some at-bats and some playing time, and then go from there, see what you have, and you get the opportunity to see, okay, can this guy play here, can this guy play there? So, you know, they're doing a lot of that before they start to really – you know, sign any kind of long-term deal. And, you know, that's, you know, maybe knowing that they're going to be taking that drop in payroll next year, you know, maybe that's where they're a little more active in signing some of these small one-year deals now, just because, you know, whatever. You had $3.5 million for Duda, $3 million for John Jay, you know, whatever. It's $6.5 million. It's really not that much. So it's, And when you know that it's only going to be committed to that 1 year, well, why not? You know, takes care of a need, and you're not hampering yourself in any way.
Absolutely. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. It'll definitely
yes.
There's certainly a lot more intrigue at spring training this year than there have been in the most recent years. And that intrigue has only been increased by some of the injuries that have occurred. You know, we've already talked about Bubba Starling dealing with some oblique issues. Not sure a timeline on that, but the first kind of major injury, major in the sense of the severity of the injury, more so than what this person means to the team necessarily, but Jesse Hahn off to the 60-day DL, a UCL sprain for him. The obvious connection there being it's likely Tommy John. If they're holding out for a second opinion, I think you were telling me, Mike, but We feel like we've talked about it on the show before, how rarely second opinions. Of course, the time we talked about it, I think, was in relative to David Price, who had a UCL issue. And he did actually – the second opinion was actually that he didn't need Tommy John.
It turned out
and he's
okay.
been fine. He's been fine ever since. Well, his production has suffered, but that could be unrelated to the UCL issue, at least as far as we know. So, you know, it's possible. I'm not going to say, you know, but rarely does the second opinion turn out the way you hope it does. So, and especially, you know, when you get snap put onto the 60-day DL that quickly, that's when you know it's probably bad. So Jesse Hahn likely gone for this year. Rose still have some team control on him, so we'll still like could see him at some point in the future in a Rose uniform. But as of now, your dreams of seeing Jesse Hahn dominate for the Royals are likely over for 2018. We've got Adalberto Mondesi with a sore arm. We've got in news of non but possibly prospective injuries, Kyle Zimmer about to start getting into games.
Yeah, tomorrow. So
we can preemptively put him on a list, I suppose.
Oh, that's so mean. I saw that it is. Sam
Mellinger
and Maria Torres were doing a Facebook thing earlier today, and they said that she said that when Kyle Zimmer came out to do his part of the workout, like he got like a standing ovation from his teammates because they know that he's going tomorrow. I'm just like, that's kind of rough.
That is rough.
But
this 6-year journey now it's been for him to try and, I mean,
yeah,
there was talk of him. I mean, he was supposed to be. They drafted him with the idea that he would have been a centerpiece on that 2015 team that won it all, because that would have been enough time to get him in and get acclimated and get up to the big leagues as a college pitcher. But he hasn't even sniffed it. So here we are.
He's already hitting double A in like 2013 and pitching pretty well. It's just,
that's what happens. So you know, hopefully, I hope it works out for him. But I'll put it this way: I don't have my hopes up.
The days of expectations are gone.
they certainly are.
Yeah, you get burned enough times, you stop touching the stove.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, what do you? Anything jump out at you about the injuries? You know, anything that's concerning? I mean, I don't think I anticipated Mondesi or Starling to be up with the team. Unless it was just kind of a wild card shot in the dark thing for Starling. So I don't know that anything besides Hahn has any sort of real tangible impact as of today.
No, and I think that, like, the Mondesi thing just seems like it's just a couple days. It's not going to be anything major. It's just, you know, oh, he's got a sore arm, and the big league camp in spring training is full, so there's plenty of guys who can jump into a game. I imagine if it was the regular season, he might have a day off and play, you know, as usual after that. With Bubba, it's a little concerning because he had that oblique injury or an oblique injury. I don't know if it's the same side or area or whatnot. But he had that last year, and it shut him down in Omaha, which really shut him out of getting an opportunity to come up in September. You know, he was just shut down in August, and you know, they weren't going to push it because, you know, those things can linger and they can impact whatever training or whatever drills you might do later on. So, you know, if that's something that holds him out for a long time, that, you know, that might just be something that keeps reoccurring. So if it's anything more than just kind of a small discomfort or tweak or anything, you know, that's, you know, it might keep him out a little while. But so far, nobody's mentioned anything like a time frame or severity. So until they really do, it just seems kind of like it's a day-to-day thing. But they'll probably give him a little extra time just because he has had that issue before. And oblique injuries can really, really linger, and they're really, really easy to aggravate in a game like baseball where your core is doing everything all the time. So I imagine they'll be cautious. With the signing of John Jay, sure doesn't seem like he was in line to break the opening day roster anyway. So you know, I'm not not too concerned, but it bears watching, I would guess.
Oblique injuries kind of feel like rib injuries in that they're kind of frustrating because you just need time. Because exactly like you said, you know, you've got the – it's kind of involves your core and it just all your movement seems to hit it. And you just have to really just not do anything kind of. So,
yep. And if it's bad
enough,
sure,
that must be frustrating.
Even breathing is tough sometimes. So.
Yeah.
You know, like that seems like that's important. I don't know.
You know, just a little bit.
I'm not a doctor. But I know
I am,
one.
But I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night. So breathing equals important. So
right.
You can book that. Pretty confident in that answer.
If you learn nothing else on this podcast, you've learned that.
There you go. So that kind of sums up the major news from spring training. I mean, is there anything that jumps out at you? Anybody that's kind of grabbed your attention so far in their performance? I know we haven't seen a ton. And
you know where you can see some.
I was just going to go there. So take it away.
Well, on Sunday, March 11th, we're going to be at Kelly's Westport Inn. The Royals are on Fox Sports Kansas City. They'll be playing Cleveland. I don't know who's going to be starting yet, but you know, by that time they should probably have a few guys optioned down to minor league camps, and you know, you'll start to see a little bit more action from the Royals. So so far most of my observation has come from radio broadcast, which doesn't really give a whole lot. So it's always nice to be able to see them on TV, and it's even better to see them on TV when you have a fully stocked bar right there. And pizza nearby too. So that, you know, game starts at 3:00. You'll probably be getting there about 2-ish. So anybody listening, if you're in Kansas City, if you're in Westport, there's no college basketball on. Well, I think there's maybe a couple of tournaments, but there's no, you know, no
local.
Yeah. Big 12 will be done. SEC will be done. You know, it'll be Selection Sunday. So Kelly's will have a TV for that too, I'm sure. So yeah,
but that won't be till, if anything, it would only coincide with the very tail end of the broadcast,
five
but,
or so. So
yeah,
you got no reason to not come out.
Absolutely.
Know, just a couple hours, hang out, have some beers. And...
yeah. Get the season. We'll have a few more, no doubt, throughout the season as we always do. So it'll be fun to kind of get the season kicked off officially, with the Royals fan crowd at Kelly's and such. So come on out. We'll be out. It'll be fun. Yep. But anyway,
the only other news, and we don't really have to go too much into this, is that the Royals signed Ricky Nolasco to a minor league deal, or at least they're in agreement. I don't know if it's officially signed, but I mean, it's, you know, it's going to happen. Nolasco is 35 years old. He's usually been a workhorse. He's kind of good for about 30 starts a year with the. You know, came up with the Marlins, traded to the Dodgers, ended up on the Twins, and has recently been with the Angels. 30-start, 180 to 200-inning type of guy, 7 strikeouts per 9, 2 walks per 9. Pretty solid numbers on that front. ERA is a little high, so, you know, you see what happens. But it's a minor league deal. We say it a lot, and other people will say that there's no such bad thing as a 1-year deal. There's definitely no such thing as a bad 1-year minor league deal. So, and I think with Jesse Hahn, you know, being put on the shelf for a while, he might step into that type of role. He's also backup if the Royals end up trading Jason Hamill and they want to fill in with a big league type of guy in the rotation. He would step right into that. And they would be able to, you know, keep some of the rookies that they've got in the minor leagues to kind of get prepared. So it's not a big signing, and I wouldn't expect a whole lot. But, you know, I think there's still a little bit of talent there and a little bit of ability. You know, if he gives you 180 innings at 4.5 ERA, that's pretty good, you know, especially for, like, the $1.5 million he'd make if he can make the big league team. That's really nothing in 2018. So Not a big name deal, but you know, could be useful.
Yeah, you never know. You know, it's always whenever you get those kind of minor league deals for players like on Alaska, you know, you get it's kind of a lottery ticket type thing. So
yeah, if happens.
Yeah, if you strike it and he comes up and you know, even if it's just something where you got a hot streak going and you get an injury and he's able to come up and fill, maybe starts a few games, maybe he just gives you a lot of, you know, relief help, whatever the case may be. It's always good to have that. So there's that. But then in other news with the Royals, so specifically tonight,
yeah,
seems to be some things going around tonight, by the way.
Hour.
Yeah, we're recording on Thursday night, by the way. Normally we record on Wednesdays, but we recording on Thursday tonight. So it'll probably be Friday at least when you hear this. Who knows what will have happened by then. But there's reports now that the Royals have offered Mike Moustakas a one-year deal. And I saw – I didn't have time to read it, but I saw a headline from I believe it was Rustin Dodd that tweeted it talking about how – it's kind of a weird way that they got here, but the Royals and Mike Moustakas are back to talking again. So it's kind of an interesting idea. You know, I think, and we were talking about this a little bit before the show, I think if you would have said last year or 2 months ago, if you would have, excuse me, if you would have said, oh, I think Mike Moustakas will be with the Royals in 2018, you'd say, okay, well, maybe they struck out on Hosmer and they decided to give Moose a big contract, or you know, whatever the case may be. You might have said something in that, and you would have been like, okay, you know, I'd probably buy that, even if whether I agreed with it or not. And so it's not necessarily all that crazy to think Moose being back with the Royals, but just because of how this offseason has evolved and how everything we've heard about Moose and everything else, how all that's evolved, it does feel a little strange. How, you know, talked about how Dayton Moore came out and just basically said that Moose had other plans and wasn't interested, and, you know, the Royals, without saying as much, kind of echoed almost a similar sentiment that they weren't necessarily interested. They offered him the qualifying offer though for the draft pick, and then now they're here, and it could be a 1 year deal anyway, and it'll be probably less than the qualifying offer. So it's just such a weird kind of dynamic. Not to mention, you know, I heard Buster Olney talking on 810 earlier this week on the Border Patrol, and he was saying, talking about Mike Moustakas, that the kind of current wisdom, I guess you could say, for that's being passed around in the Moustakas camp is that he might just have to wait until the season has started to sign with someone, because then you drop the draft pick compensation at that point. But you know, the whole point of kind of changing the system was to hopefully get rid of the scenarios like that. But this is such a weird off season. Here we are again. And Buster Olney was kind of saying, I think that might actually be the smart move for Moustakas. But yet, you know, here we are. But then you run the risk of, like, you know, like Kendrys Morales a few years ago before he came to the Royals, where he had a very poor season coming in June. You know, I mean, when you lose all those reps from spring training, when you lose those reps at the beginning of the year, that's when, you know, you get off to a bad start, and then it can kind of snowball. So would Moustakas be – the idea behind a one-year deal is he'd be coming right back out on the market next year. So if he comes in, but he comes in late and – it snowballs into a bad year, is he hurting or helping himself? So the best case scenario might be to sign a 1 year deal, just get into camp, get wherever you are, just kind of head down, grind it out. And if he has another 38 home run season, then, you know, 2 years in a row of that kind of power output, he's going to have a lot better chance of getting signed. Now, That's to say nothing of the free agency next year. But at this point, you know, you can't really think. You don't want to be afraid of next year, because you got to worry about this year and actually getting signed and getting in camp and producing. So, it's quite interesting, and it this feels like something that could move fast one way or the other. I don't know, but
yeah,
we'll definitely, you know, see what happens, and it'll probably happen in the next couple of days, I would think. But it would that would be something if Moose came back to the Royals next year. That would definitely be something. I guess the way this offseason has transpired, I don't know that anything can surprise at this point, but man, that would be pretty nuts.
Yeah, the way it's developed, I think you're right on that point. That's been the weirdest thing. And that, you know, and I wonder, like, if they hadn't ended up getting Lucas Duda, and if they hadn't signed John Jay, you know, to the point where now you look at, okay, there's almost the semblance of like a lineup with some reliability to it, where, you know, you kind of know what you've got in a lot of those spots. Whereas before, you were hoping that Paulo Orlando or Bubba Starling jumped out, and you were hoping that Hunter Dozier or Ryan O'Hearn or Frank Schwindel could develop at first somehow, and one of those guys might emerge. Now you have a guy at first base that you feel pretty confident in, and a guy in center field that you feel pretty confident in. And now, since the market is really tanked for most of these guys, yeah, I mean, if they're able to bring Moustakas back, I don't know. For some reason, I feel like it's going to be like $9 million when they finally get it done. I don't.
Yeah, I was thinking 10. So
like, I don't have any like info on that. There's, you know, I don't have a source to figure that out. It just feels like, you know, compared to like what other deals have happened already, you know, for someone like him, that seems like the type of money that would get him to, you know, actually like jump in and get back onto the field. You know, but I think, you know, what you mentioned is right, that he's incentivized in a way to just get out there and just start putting up some numbers and showing that he's in a camp and he's, you know, going to be, you know, in line for the season. Because, you know, once those guys sign, you know, mid-season, they don't get a spring training. You know, they don't get to go face pitchers and work on things and, you know, kind of get back in rhythm over the course of a month to start on opening day and be, you know, all systems go. They got to jump in right away, because you've got to add that player to your 40-man roster. You've got to have them on the active roster. There's no minor league assignment of any kind to get them up to speed. It's, you know, the ink dry is in, here's your uniform, you know, batting practice is at 4. That's it. You know, you get out there, you know, you've got to get started right away. So, and that's, you know, Kendrys Morales in 2014, when he ran into that issue, that was really kind of what happened. He really struggled early on, and it wasn't until like September that he started to hit like we've seen in 15, 16, and 17. So it really does impact the way a player can adjust and kind of get ready for the season when you have no opportunity to get ready for the season. So I think that is something that he has to be thinking about too. Plus, if you're Moustakas and, you know, this does turn into a one-year agreement, you're coming back to a situation that you're comfortable with, that, you know basically everybody who's in the organization already. You know, you're coming into a situation where, you know, maybe you have some lineup protection. You feel like, okay, Sal Perez and Lucas Duda might be hitting behind me when it's all said and done, instead of, you know, Sal Perez and Hunter Dozier are hitting behind me, or you know, Chesler Cuthbert, maybe, if he was playing first base. So you just kind of get the opportunity, if you're Moustakas, to come into a very comfortable situation. You can get your money now. You know, and I'm not above the players going and holding out to get the money that they feel they deserve, because I'd rather the players have it than the owners. But, you know, if $9 million is where he settles and says, okay, I'm comfortable with this, you know, then, you know, good for him. I mean, that's a really good amount of money. So while it's less than what he would expect, it's not anything to sneeze at. by any means. So I think that all of those things kind of work out for him to put him in a good position where, you know, if it does turn out, and like you said, this could be quick, you know, this stuff doesn't usually pop up unless the Royals are really close to having something. So, you know, it might be by the end of this. I'm checking Twitter right now because I'm just expecting it to come up. I think what Jeffrey Flanagan reported recently was club's not confirming, but the Royals are working toward an agreement on a likely 1-year deal. So it's not quite the language of they have the deal, but it's got that touch of being really close. So by the time you listen to this on Friday morning or afternoon, deal might be done. You know, it might be that Mike Moustakas returns with Alcides Escobar for 2018, which I would not have figured both of those would come back.
But, no.
You know, if that's how it works out, that's how it works out.
Yeah, and if you really think about it, you bring Moose back and you're looking at the entire infield would be, you know, veteran guys, Merrifield, of course, being the closest to kind of a fresh face, but he's been around for 2 seasons at the major league level. And then,
and
you know,
he's
you're
been
out
a pro forever. So,
yeah, I mean, he's 29. So, yeah. You know, you've got, and then you'd have Alex Gordon in left, John Jay in center, and right field would kind of be the, you know, Salvi, of course, behind the plate. So your kind of freshest face, if you will be in right field, whether it's, you know, Soler for the whole season or Bonifacio, but we saw both of them last year. So, you know, we thought maybe we'd have 2 outfield positions with a new face. We'd have maybe 2, maybe 3 infield positions with a newer kind of fresher face. And now it's just this kind of veteran heavy lineup. So it's really kind of weird, which I don't know if it shows you that the Royals are just saying, hey, we need to bake a little bit more time into this timeline here for these youngsters to develop, or if they're saying these guys aren't what we were hoping they were, so let's try and patch something together while we figure out what to do and wait for the, you know, the next wave to come up, the guys that are in, you know, mostly rookie and A-ball currently. So it's kind of perplexing. I don't know. You know, I don't know what the Royals are doing, but
– yeah.
You know?
And I don't know what it means for Chesler Cuthbert. He's out of options, mm-hmm. So you can't send him to Omaha. So, I mean, does that mean that he gets traded off? They've said all offseason that they want to be around $100, $105 million. Well, they're at like $115 now. So, you know, Jason Hamill's due for like $9 million now. So does that mean he gets traded? You know, there's just a lot of stuff that would have to fall in place after this for the Royals to continue towards whatever goals they've stated. Granted, those things can change, but, like, it's like the oldest rebuild ever. It's really weird.
Right. And if you're trading Cuthbert because you're signing Moose, you're still signing Moose to a 1-year deal, and you're trading away what would be I don't know exactly what all the service time is, but like 3 or 4 years of Cuthbert control for 1 year of having Moustakas back and then still having your third base left open next year.
Yeah.
And unless you really have faith that, you know, Hunter Dozier is going to be ready and there to take over, I guess if that's one possibility, but I mean, you're just pushing off a problem until next year and then kind of creating one where maybe you could have figured out that you never had one in the first place because Cuthbert is able mm-hmm. to handle the role. So, yeah, the whole thing just kind of
feels weird.
I mean,
Cuthbert's
I'd love
had
to
a good
Boos.
Spring, so it's like it's not like they're, you know, Dozier's struggling and Cuthbert's struggling and it's like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? It's like – Cuthbert's had a pretty good spring defensively and at the plate so far. So it's just like, you know, I mean, we've seen him, as we said last week, we've seen him fill in and for Moustakas when he got hurt in 2016, and he did a fine job. You know, if he did that same kind of year with prorated up to 162 games, he'd be, you know, a 265, 270 hitter with, like, you know, 15 to 18 homers. It's pretty good. It's not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Moustakas 38 home runs good, but no. It's for a guy that you're paying basically the minimum to, you know, and you're not having to go pay 9 to 15 million or whatever it works out to be. Yeah, it's fine. And you get to figure out, you know, there's also the value of having that guy play a full season at that position to see if he can really do it. You know, if he can repeat 2016's performance, well, then you can kind of figure that, okay, this guy's probably the guy that we're going to have there unless someone else really, like, pushes him away from it, instead of, you know, having some uncertainty with Hunter Dozier, who I think ultimately can play. Took a lot, got a lot of feedback on Hunter Dozier in the last week. And I like Hunter Dozier. I want to make that clear. But I also think that if you're comparing Dozier and Cuthbert, Cuthbert has shown that he can do it at the big league level. He's a full year younger than Dozier. He doesn't have the injury history that Dozier has. So if you're the Royals and those are the only two options, then Cuthbert has to feel more reliable. But the flip side is, if they're making an official offer to Mike Moustakas, then, you know, what does that say about their confidence in either of those guys for at least this year? So it really complicates a lot of things. It's really hard to interpret what the heck we thought we knew a week ago with this kind of news. So if they get the deal done, it's kind of weird for, you know, 2018 and beyond.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, like one of those movies where the protagonist is, like, obsessed with a particular, you know, person of the opposite sex and is like, oh, I want to date this person. And then they find out that person sucks. But then that person wants them for some reason, and so they decide to try it out anyway. You know, I mean, that's kind of, it feels just that kind of a weird, like, well, we were both kind of on the same page of a mutual parting, but now we're back, and, you know, 2 years ago we wanted to have Moustakas here long term, so we should still want that, shouldn't we? Shouldn't we want that to happen? And even though it's not long term, but we should want him back next year if that's all we can get. And I would absolutely love for Moose to come back and not only break his own record from last year, but be the first person
to hit 40.
Because that's the one thing that was missing from last year. We were hoping, and we thought it was a certainty for most of the year until he kind of had some troubles. But thank God he still got the record. While we were on air, that was still so cool that happened, like, right as we started to record.
Right as we started.
That's awesome. Yeah. But, you know, I'd love for him to come back and hit 40 in Kauffman. That'd be fantastic. But it'd be so weird to, you know, trying to figure out what that would mean for the Royals and all the rest, and who knows. So it would definitely – they've been so hard to figure out this season. It's almost like the Royals – kind of want to rebuild, but they don't want to actively tank, because we've got, you know, 7 to 10 teams that are just outright basically saying, yeah, we're tanking.
Trying. Yeah.
Not even trying. And then, you know, so then the Royals say, well, maybe we should go the route of trying to rebuild. But then, you know, if you've got that many teams that are just outright tanking, you could probably convince yourself, if you're the GM of a baseball team that just won the World Series 3 years ago, you could probably convince yourself, you know what? Maybe if all these teams are tanking, if we just sign John Jay and Lucas Duda, maybe we get Boots back and we bring Esky back, maybe we can scrape together enough wins that we can, you know, take advantage of all these teams that aren't even trying and sneak into a wild card spot. You know, I don't know that I would necessarily agree with that logic and, you know, try and use it myself. But I would not be surprised to see the GM of a baseball team, especially if that GM is Dayton Moore and that baseball team is the Royals, that you would kind of convince yourself that that was a thing that could happen. So
yeah, tanking is just doesn't seem to be his way. I mean, even if you get into the semantics of it, because, I mean, it's not like teams are going out to lose games, but they're very willingly playing inexperienced players to find out what they have. And if they lose games, oh, well, we'll just get a high draft pick next year. And Dayton just doesn't, you know, seem to be able to let himself do that, which in a way you kind of have to respect a little bit, even if it doesn't make a lot of sense when, you know, you see what teams can do when they load up on those top five kind of draft picks. But, you know, yeah. I don't know. I mean,
it was
like Hosmer and Moustakas were top five picks, but so was Christian Colon, so was Bubba Starling, so was Kyle Zimmer. So I guess there's a counterpoint there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe they just don't trust picking in the top five anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because on that same segment that I heard Buster Olney talking on, he was talking about the team's tanking, and, you know, he said, unfortunately, a lot of them are doing it because they've seen the reward in recent years with you know, the Astros last year and the Cubs the year before them, both teams that before it was, you know, quote unquote fashionable, were actively tanking, and it paid, it paid off. And, you know, I think the Astros at one point had a $19 million payroll one of those years. I think he was saying there was one year where only one player on the entire roster was making over $1 million, which is absurd.
Right.
And especially in this day and age in baseball. And so they were just getting all these picks. And, you know, the Royals are kind of also in that mold, except for the intentional part. It was right. Unintentional tanking for the Royals. You know, they had all those top five picks year after year after year. And, you know, so even though, you know, that's 3 years in a row, you can look to the World Series champion and say that, you know, again, even though it was unintentional for the Royals, that tanking can produce a World Series championship. So, you know, that's, I think, unfortunately, why we're seeing so many of those teams that are doing that. But, and as Buster Olney, I like the term he used, was failure by design. But designing failure is what he said. But it was also interesting too that another thing that he had mentioned was that there are only three teams, because he made a comparison of Dayton Moore along the lines of what you were saying to Billy Beane, not necessarily in their general managing style, but he was talking about Beane and the Athletics and his philosophy, and he was simply, you know, Billy Beane's philosophy is, I'm here to win. I'm here to win games. And if someone is out there on the free agent market that's going to help me win two more games, even if those two more games turn me from a 70-win team into a 72-win team, I'm going to take those two wins. I'm going to make that signing. And, you know, he was saying exactly what you were saying about Dayton Moore. There's a respect in that. You kind of have to respect that idea of just, you know, we're here to win. Let's win. Let's put as best product on the field that we can with the means and resources that we have in place. Because interestingly enough, there's only been three teams. And this is another Buster Olney stat that he mentioned that I found fascinating, that since 1997, so 20 years, only three teams that have had no seasons in that time span of losing less than 75 games, or I'm sorry, of winning less than 75 games. They've won 75 or more games every season since 97.
For 20 years.
The Yankees are one, of course, seems reasonable because they've got all the money that they need to cover up their mistakes. The Cardinals are another, and of course, because they're just a really well-run organization, maybe the best in baseball, depending on who you ask. And then the other was the Oakland A's. So kind of surprising that you would, you know, they would be in that category because they haven't, you know, I mean, the Yankees in that period of 97 to 2017, I mean, between the Yankees and Cardinals, it's what, six World Series or whatever between the those two franchises. So, you know, it's, you know, the A's haven't even made a World Series in that time frame, but you know they've still racked up a lot of wins, and you know they have had some less successful seasons, but have avoided complete failure and tanking. So that that could be where the Royals are headed. And again, I do agree that I think you do have to have kind of a bit of a respect for that, because it's we talked for years about how it was. It was disrespectful to us as fans that the Royals put out such a poor product on the field. So we can't turn around and say you need to put out the poorest product possible because you need to to tank so we can have better draft picks. You know, that's not really fair of us to say as fans after ragging on them for so long for doing the opposite. So,
do you want some breaking news?
I absolutely do.
All right, this is a tweet from Jeff Passan.
Okay,
breaks a lot of Royals news.
He does.
He says, but he lives in Kansas City too, so people may or may not know that. He's also about 5'2". Not really. He's 5'8".
It happens.
Not important. He says, Mike Moustakas has agreed to a one-year deal with a mutual second-year option with the Kansas City Royals. Sources with knowledge of the deal tell Yahoo Sports guarantees him $6.5 million and can max out at $22.7 million.
Wow.
Interesting. So,
wow.
I'm interested to see what that option buyout looks like.
Wow.
That could be like $3 million this year, $3.5 million buyout. And if he just hits a ton, we'll see. But we're going to hit retweet on that because it's Jeff Passan. And
that's about as reliable as you can get in terms of sources.
He is legit. He's one of the best national reporters out there. And so that's a thing. So the Royals bring back Mike Moustakas.
Wow.
Go figure.
Unbelievable. So, okay. Strap in, folks.
Right. Get those moose calls back.
We're ready to go.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That is nuts. I mean, just, again, not so much that Moose is back, but, man, how it's happened is a long and winding road.
Here's the some salary info real quick, not to cut you off, but $5.5 million salary in 2018, $2.2 million in performance bonus potential. There is a mutual option for $15 million in 2019 with a $1 million buyout.
Wow.
Not bad. I mean, mutual option is probably not going to happen. Usually
they rarely
doesn't.
Do. And even if it did, it's still cheaper than at $15 million, still cheaper than a qualifying offer.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Not that he would be eligible for one next year, but cheaper than
even
had to pay one out. So
right. So
wow.
There you go.
They actually, it's a good thing that we recorded earlier. We normally record at 6:30 if we can, but we recorded at 7:30 tonight. So. Had we recorded at normal time, it would have been the same old story where the Royals would have come out with this news after we're done recording, but we got one. We got one on air.
We did.
So,
and it's Moustakas again.
I know. So he hit just as we were talking about how cool it was for the 37th home run to happen on air, and now here we are with the re-signing happening on air. That's, man, I'm just – it makes me smile just because – it's just funny how it all happens.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. But so let's do this though. Let's get 40 home runs from Moose, get another 30 from John Jay, Lucas Duda, and then have John Jay set the table for him let's get some wins. Let's do this. I don't know what now there may be a 75 win team. Putting Moose back in the fold. So, all right. Maybe, and expect, especially if that, even though, again, mutual options rarely happen, but if they've got that, I guess Maybe you can use that to convince yourself that trading Chester Cuthbert is a good idea.
Yeah.
And I might do that, so be on the lookout for that. Maybe next week we'll have a trade to talk about. Who knows?
Yeah. That, okay. Well, interesting. Did not expect that to be part of this show.
No, did not. I mean, at the beginning of the day, when we start emailing about how we want to structure the show and what we want to talk about, I mean, Moose wasn't even a thing.
No.
At least in terms of him being on the Royals, we were probably going to give an update on where he is in free agency because it's what we've been doing. But, I mean, that wasn't even on the radar. It was him being – then all of a sudden things started to pick up around the time we started to record, and now here we are. Yeah. We said they move fast.
They made the offer at like – they made the offer at like 7:21, and it's 8:49 now. So at least according to John Heyman, he reported that they had made the offer at least. So – who knows when they may actually made it, but yeah, okay. That came together pretty quickly.
Yes, it did.
So,
all right.
Okay.
So there we go. I think that's a good note to end the show on.
Yeah. I don't know what else to do now. So
breaking news. Yeah. Well, we'll have that pretty much fills out the roster. I mean, at this point, then it's only right field now that the Royals have to worry about.
Yeah, and that'll be Bonifacio. He's hitting great. So it's...
yeah, I mean, they've got two good options. Or no, I don't know if I say good, but you know, two legitimate options that they're going to have. So if, I mean, it's basically set now. It's just everybody getting time and getting in there, and the reps getting ready to go. So,
yeah.
Well, I guess that at least as far as position players, you know, the bullpen is still kind of wide open, but we can talk about that at a later time.
Yep.
So. We'll have a lot more time to talk about that now with all these moves the Royals have made to solidify positions that were open. So that'll be fun, though. It's always good to, you know, keep the band back together, if you will. It'll be fun. Good for Moose, good for the Royals. Hopefully he hits 40 this year.
Right.
I'm on board. Let's do it.
They could have two guys hit 30 if Duda picks it up.
Yeah.
Three. That could definitely Soler really gets it going.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's a brave new world.
I mean, and, you know, Bonifacio, what, he had 20 last year? I mean,
he had 17 in like 110 games.
Okay. So almost
he's
20.
He's not quite there, but I mean, he's. You know,
yeah, probably not quite a 30. He's
in great shape. He's hitting the ball really hard this spring. 2025 is not crazy.
Yeah. So. I mean, if you've got, you know, because was last year, what was the stat? Like the first time they had four players over 20 home runs, or was it 25? What was the?
It would have probably been 20. But I mean, they had Moose with 38. Sal hit, what, 27? Hosmer hit 25. Yep. Witt hit 19. Moss hit 21, 22.
Mm-hmm.
So it must have been over 20.
Yeah.
Because he didn't quite get there. But, you know, still.
But, yeah, I mean, so you could have, you know, something similar. If Moose hits another 35 to 40 again this year, and like you said, if Duda can hit 30 like he did last year, and, you know, I guess I haven't really looked at park factors for, you know, New York compared to Kansas City, but it's not exactly a pitcher friendly park.
They've moved their fences a little bit at Citi Field, whereas
yeah.
Before it was, well, Jeff Francoeur said it's a damn joke back in 2011 after he had went from the Mets to the Rangers and then to the Royals. It's a little smaller, but I mean, I think they play about similar without having the data in front of me.
That was the point I was kind of driving at. So if Duda can hit 30 there, then stands to reason he could hit 30 here. And then, yeah, you know, you throw in somewhere between 15 to 25 from your typical crew of your Bonifacio, Soler, Gordon, Perez. Looking pretty good, you know, at least in the home run category. Getting people on base, getting them in, giving up less runs or fewer runs to the opposing team. those things will be the real trick to determine whether or not they can turn that little extra power into victories. So we'll see. But hey, all right, we're in, folks.
Things.
We're in there. Things are happening.
Yeah,
we can talk about it in person on Sunday.
Yes.
At Kelly's Westport Inn, March 11th, Sunday, Kelly's Westport Inn. 3 o'clock is when the game starts. We'll be there a little bit beforehand. Feel free to show up whenever. It'll be fun. We'll just hang out, drink some beers, talk some Royals, watch some Royals, maybe talk some basketball. Lots of things going on. Bring your Moose jersey, Moose antlers, whatever.
Sure, yeah.
You know, why the hell not? It'll be fun. So definitely be sure to visit us out there at Kelly's, who's been such a great sponsor to us for so long. And, you know, even if you don't make it out on Sunday, try and make it out some other time, because it's always, always a good time at Kelly's, specifically when they've got St. Patrick's Day coming up. Kelly's is basically the epicenter
of yeah.
in Kansas City, which is the following Saturday. So
tip your bartenders on
yes,
that day too.
Definitely on St. Patty's Day for sure. Yes. That will be, that'll be a fun time. So be sure to go visit them, and then go visit BP Kansas City. Of course, we'll have plenty to say, discuss, and write about John Jay and Mike Moustakas. There's already stuff up about Jay. There'll be stuff up about Moustakas tomorrow, I'm sure, if not tonight, depending on when people can get around to it. So definitely check that out if you want even more analysis on having Mike Moustakas back and what that means for Cuthbert and Dozier and all the rest of the people who may be affected by this, as well as the Jay signing. So definitely be sure to visit our sponsors, and be sure to come back next week. So hopefully maybe the Royals will keep wheeling and dealing and making more moves. Who knows? Maybe they'll trade for Eric Hosmer. I don't know. But be sure to come back next week. We'll discuss more Royals baseball and whatever moves they happen to make in between now and then. Always a good time. But thank you so much for listening. We love you all. Couldn't do it without you. We appreciate all your listening so much, and the interaction on Twitter and emails. It's kind of started to pick up a little bit. We've seen some, you know, people have generated some discussions with us about stuff that we've been talking about on the show, whether it's on Twitter or we've seen some emails. I think people are starting to get into that baseball mood mm-hmm. here. Weather's starting to get nicer. You know, football's been done and for a while now. Spring training has ramped up fully. Everyone's getting in the mood. So keep it coming. We love it. We love to hear from you guys, whether it's on Twitter, email, whatever. Keep it coming. We'll keep generating that discussion, and come out on Sunday. See us at Kelly's, 3 o'clock, March 11th, Sunday for that. So we'll see you all then, and until we'll see you next week when we with the new show. But until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.